come in with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the next generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news,
give me news,
give me views,
give me views.
Gaming Steve,
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What to see?
What to me?
What's to me?
Gaming Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who ran over Frogger, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hi there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker, and in this week's show, I have a special episode where I sit down with Pete Hines, the VP of Public Relations and Marketing at Bethesda Softworks, the makers of the Elder Scrolls series. And we sit down for more than an hour and go through Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion. I ask him a whole bunch of questions. I ask him some basic overview questions as well as some pretty advanced questions that I got from the fans and the forums. So before I get into that, I do want to give you guys an overview. I also got to play the game Oblivion for both the Xbox 360 and the PC pretty much for an entire day today. And next week's show of Gaming Steve, I'm going to give you guys a detailed preview of what I did and what I thought of the game. And, you know, I pretty much tried a little bit of everything and also played the game, as I said, on both systems. I can even give you an overview of how it plays on the 360 and the PC. But that's going to be for next week's show. For this week's show, I interviewed Pete and we went through quite a bit. And let's get right into that interview.
So this is Steve here, and I'm sitting with Pete Hines, who is the VP of Public Relations and Marketing for Bethesda Software. How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
That is good. And of course, we're here to talk about the new Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, which is highly anticipated by all those involved. And let's just go through, before I get into the meat of the interview, let's just go through about yourself and your role at Bethesda.
My role at Bethesda, I mean, obviously my primary focus is on all the public relations and marketing that we do for, not just for Oblivion, but for all of our titles. But I tend to be a jack of all trades. I get involved in a lot of other stuff. I, you know, was in charge of doing the manual for Morrowind and again for Oblivion. I do a lot of editing and work on the strategy guide that'll be coming out for the game. So I fill in a lot of areas that is probably not typical for somebody that does what I do. But, you know, we're a smaller company and I get pretty involved in the development process. Todd Howard is my best friend, the executive producer, so obviously I'm pretty closely tied to everything that's going on and, you know, having lunch with the designers every day talking about what's going on, so I probably know more about what's going on than most folks that do what I do. So, a little bit of everything.
So for those people who are new to the Elder Scrolls series, who have never heard of it or played the previous series, mm-hmm. can you just give a 10,000-foot overview of the series and what Oblivion is?
Elder Scrolls is a series that was started in 1994. It was predominantly PC only until we came out with Morrowind on the PC and the Xbox in 2002. And it is essentially a big, huge fantasy sandbox. We believe in creating these really large worlds that allow you to be whatever kind of character you want and go and do whatever you want. We are very much into open-ended gameplay. And letting the player define what it is that they want to do in the world. So we have a main quest and we have lots of other quests that you can do, miscellaneous and dungeons to explore, but it's ultimately up to the player to determine what it is they want to do and how they want to do it.
But there is a main quest. So if you want to play this game and just do your standard RPG and just do a main quest from beginning to end and then put it down, you can do that.
Absolutely, absolutely, right. So if you just say, I want to finish Oblivion, quote-unquote, it'll take you about 20 to 25 hours to finish the main quest, depending on how much stuff you do off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. But the game never ends, so it's never really finished. And the idea is, one of the things that we found a lot with Morrowind is people would go in and play it, and they would play it for a certain amount and finish this thing or that thing. They'd finish the main quest or finish one of the house quests, and then they'd leave, and they'd come back. You know, they'd go play some other games for a while, and then they'd come back and play a little bit more Morrowind and try, you know, something else, create a new character or try a different guild. So it's very much a game that's never really done with, because there's always something else for you to go and see. There's literally hundreds of places for you to explore. There's just quests all over the place for you to do. So you can really get in and define just how much or how little you want to do at any given time.
So you can just play this game forever.
Yeah, I mean, literally forever. It never ends. So you can, you know, there's people who are still playing Morrowind, you know, years later, and whether it's with the same character or they go back and play a new character that's, you know, uses completely different skills and they're role playing, you know, a very different type of character. You know, they played a big Conan the Barbarian guy the first time, and they want to play, you know, a wizard guy who doesn't use melee weapons or whatever the case may be. There's always an opportunity to role play a different way.
So can you tell us a little bit about the story for Oblivion and what's going on in this one?
So the main focus of the game, and while you can or can't play the main quest as you so choose, you can choose to do everything in the main quest, or you can set that aside and go off and do other things in the game. What's going on in the world is the Emperor and his sons are assassinated, and you sort of become embroiled in what's going on as the Emperor is running for his life under the protection of some of his guards from this assassination attempt, and you kind of get wrapped up in it, and he entrusts you with taking the Amulet of Kings, which is the symbol of the Emperor, and to go find his lost son. He has a son, an illegitimate son that was born to him and taken away, basically at birth. And you have to go find out what happened to that kid, find him, because he is now the only surviving heir to the throne. And once the Emperor is killed and there's no heir on the throne, these portals open up between Tamriel, which is the world of the Elder Scrolls where the game takes place, and Oblivion, which is a plane of existence that is sort of like hell. It's where all the demons in our game live and come from. So these portals open up and the demons start invading the land and destroying cities and terrorizing people. And so the only way to stop the attacks is to find this true heir and put him back on the throne, at which point the portals will be closed and order will be restored. But until that happens, these things continue to happen in the world. So even though you may not be playing the main quest, they will be affecting the people around, because gates will continue to open randomly in different parts of the world. And you, again, you can choose to go and, you know, close the gates and help the people, or ignore them and go off doing whatever it was you were doing.
So the hallmarks of the Elder Scrolls games are always, and let me see if I missed any, it's always the graphics, it's always the immense gameplay, and the incredible depth.
Yeah, and not necessarily in that order. I mean, yeah. You know, certainly the graphics thing comes from Todd. Todd is admittedly a graphics whore. He loves the pretty graphics, and so he's really the one that took that to be a linchpin. Like, if we're going to really move this genre forward and move our series forward, then we need to do something outside of what everybody else is doing. And so this is what we're going to do. And he started it with Morrowind and then went really nuts with Oblivion in terms of the level of graphical fidelity. But, you know, the game has always been about big, huge, open-ended worlds where you can go whenever you want. It's always been about character creation and the customization of that experience, letting the player determine where it is they want to go and how it is they want to play. And not doing what other role-playing games have traditionally done, which is you're a spellcaster, you can't use weapons, or you're a thief, you can't use magic. We don't lock off gameplay experience from the player as much as possible. We want you to be able to play whatever kind of character you want.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about the voiceover talent? I know you got some pretty big names in those.
Yeah, so one of the things we decided is for some of the key roles in this game, we wanted to go after some big-name folks. Because number one, it gets people's attention, which never hurts. But number two, because we wanted to bring a real presence to those roles. They were really key roles in the game. And so right away, you meet Patrick Stewart, who is the voice of the Emperor. And he sort of gets things off to a great start in providing the sort of overall narrative of what's happening right at the beginning, and it kind of getting things off and running. The son that you have to go and find of his, the lost son, is voiced by Sean Bean, mm-hmm. Who does just an amazing job. He's so good in that role. And then the bad guy who you're pitted against and who is basically the guy behind all of this stuff is voiced by Terrence Stamp, who, again, both Terrence and Sean have never done video games before. This is their first time, but for their first time, they bring to the game what you see them bring to movies on the screen. It's just this great presence, and their voice talents are really fantastic. So that was just a wonderful, you never know exactly what you're going to get with folks who haven't ever done this before. Patrick Stewart has done numerous video games, but these guys, all three of them, just consummate professionals. And then Linda Carter, who did voice work for us in Morrowind, is back again to do voices again in Oblivion. So she provides the voice of the female Nords, which is one of the races in the game.
So, I mean, but there's more than just them, correct?
Oh, yeah. So all of the voices in the game are we work with a lot of local talent in the DC area. We've got a lot of guys and women in the area who are professional voice actors. The guy who does the announcing for at MCI Arena for Washington Capitals games is one of the guys we use for the voice. So he provides this great, rich, he's fantastic. So it's a lot of folks that maybe you wouldn't recognize their names, but they're very accomplished and successful voice actors who do a lot of work in the DC area. And yeah, it was obviously very important because all of the voices in the game, all of the dialogue in the game, has voice. So there's no reading of text with no voice to it, like there was quite a bit in Morrowind. So every line of dialogue is spoken.
Anyone like you in the game?
No. Aww. No. We did a bunch of developer voices for placeholder, but I'm sure those will sit in some archive somewhere for only us to enjoy. But yeah, that was pretty great to hear some of the designers and artists doing voice work as placeholder for the game. It was funny stuff.
So for a development standpoint, if you guys are doing voiceovers for the entire game and every line of dialogue is voiced over, that means the game had to pretty much be not done, but in a way done like a while ago, because you had to do voiceover. I imagine you didn't really do it up to the last second.
No, definitely not. What we usually do is we do pretty extensive work to try and get all the dialogue sort of locked in and what it needs to be, and then we'll do pickups. Okay. So we'll go back for, oops, this quest needs this one bit of dialogue from somebody to get the player moving along, or we need to re-record this to better explain, or because we've had to move, whatever the case may be. So there's pickup work you have to do, but that's why we don't use name talent for everything, because there's, just so much dialogue that, you got to get Patrick Stewart back in the studio for pickups. It's not just, hey, how about dropping by this afternoon? It's a major logistical nightmare, because these guys are very busy and have a lot of stuff going on. Sean Bean was in, where was he? He was in South Africa or somewhere when we were trying to do his voice recording stuff. Mm-hmm. So those folks, it's really like when they do it, that's it. Like you'd better get it right the first time. For everybody else, we have the ability to do some pickup. But yeah, a lot of the dialogue stuff, that was locked in and done last fall.
Right.
And from a content standpoint, I think one of the misconceptions since folks is that you're working on the game right up till it's finished from the standpoint of adding things, and that's definitely not the case. You never finish a game if you keep touching it and messing with it. You gotta stop trying to put new stuff in and just fix what's in there and make sure it's not broken. So from a content standpoint, we've been done for a while because we had to get to the point where we knew everything that was going to be in the game, and then just testing it and banging on it to make sure we got all the bugs out and figured out every possible scenario that the game might have to encounter based on what the player is doing at any given moment.
Right. It's just from a logistical standpoint. I mean, I don't know how people realize just how difficult it is to put. It's like voiceovers. It's like, oh, why come there's not voiceovers for everyone in the game? It's like, because you have to have the game done before you can even get all the voiceover talent and then get everyone in. I mean, it's a huge logistical problem.
Huge. When we had two studios going for at least a month, just nonstop recording every day, processing all night, two studios going full tilt basically 24 hours a day just to get it done. I mean, the reams of paper that encompassed all of the scripts, I mean, they stack several feet high. And the amount of data that takes up on the DVD is enormous. I mean, it was literally a problem for us. Like, are we going to be able to fit all of this? Because it's about the biggest data you can put in a game is actually the voice files. Stuff like video and whatnot doesn't take up nearly as much space as all that voice data. So it was definitely a challenge, but at the end of the day, it was definitely well worth it.
So let's get to the actual main quest. So one complaint that I've heard from both the lay people who just pick it up and try to play, and even the professionals, is that with Morrowind and some of the Elder Scrolls games, is that they're hard for you to pick up for the single-player campaign. It's hard for you to get into. That I've heard, I'm playing the game, and then I wander into the woods, and I get killed by a crab, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And, like, how do I, know how to do the single-player campaign? It's one of those, you're in a big world, and you could do anything. And how does this one, sort of address those issues and make it a little easier for you, the person, to play and do the main quest?
Well, I mean, one of the things that first of all, that's they're absolutely correct. Morrowind was very easy to get lost in. You get lost going to find the very first guy you got to go find in Balmora. To some extent, it's an issue of hardcore versus casual. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's a larger issue of, regardless of what class you put yourself in terms of what kind of gamer you are, we shouldn't be using that as a crutch or an excuse as to how hard it is to figure out what to do next. Like, I play games nonstop year-round and have since I was 6 years old. But that doesn't mean that I don't still get annoyed when I can't figure out exactly where to go or what to do. It doesn't mean that when I want to know where to go next that I shouldn't have something that tells me, yeah, you got to go here. Oh, yeah, that's right, I forgot that. Because in our game, to your point, you can go off the beaten path and do 50 things between the first quest and the main quest and the second one. And it's very easy to forget what it is you're supposed to be doing. Or, you join the Thieves Guild and you're doing some Thieves Guild stuff, and then you go off to do the main quest for 15 hours, and then you say, hey, I'm going to go back and do some more of that Thieves Guild stuff. And you have no idea what you were supposed to do. So our goal was really to make sure that in those cases, we always have very clear information on what you're supposed to do next. That doesn't mean there's no difficulty in having to figure some things out for yourself, or that it's just spoon-fed to you in a way that just makes it too easy. It's just that you have a general idea of what you're supposed to do next. Even if it's just in the Thieves Guild, you need to fence X, number of gold pieces worth of stolen items before I can give you something else to do. At least that's, we don't tell you go steal these stolen things from these people's houses. Mm-hmm. We just tell you got to go steal some more stuff and fence it at your local fence. So how you decide to do that is up to you, but at least you know what it is you're supposed to do next. So we definitely put a lot more effort into the way that we track all of your quests and the ability to look at your current quest list, click on any quest, see all the information you've gotten about that quest, telling you exactly where to go next. You can make that your active quest, and you can get a marker on your map in most cases that says, this is where you're supposed to go next. You're supposed to go talk to this guy, and this guy is located in this town. Mm-hmm. And then at least you know which direction you need to head. So we definitely put a lot more emphasis on it this time. All the feedback we've gotten from folks that have played the game is that it's noticeable if it's something you're looking for, but it's not noticeable from the standpoint that it just feels like that's the way it should work. It doesn't jump out at you. It's just very easy to use as it should be. So I think most folks who played the original ones, who kind of had that experience of, the quest system sometimes got a little bogged down or it was a little tough to follow, we'll definitely notice it more. But people who pick it up and play for the first time, to your point, who aren't familiar with the series, it's not something that's going to jump out as really noticeable. It's just going to feel very natural and easy to use, which at the end of the day is the intended result.
Yeah, I mean, as I said real quick, is that I played it already today a bit. And from the beginning, it was very easy to get into. You were taught all the systems very quickly. You were taught the magic, how to pick up and equip items, how to use the mortar and pestle, how to poison weapons, and it was very well done. And, some of the last Morrowind games, it was just felt like, okay, here's everything you can do, and just do it. And you're like, what?
Yeah, we definitely threw you out into the world with less information last time than we do this time. Where part of it was the goal that, we want to be able to teach you some stuff before you really need to use it. And part of it was just what's more fun? Is it more fun to fight your way through 15 menus and make a bunch of character choices without having played the game? Or is it more fun to start playing and do a bunch of stuff? And then we say, okay, now you've been doing this for a while. What did you like best? What is it you want to do in the game?
Right.
So it's both of those. It's that it gets the game off to a better start, and it feeds the information to you in a manner that's a little easier to digest and to take in. The guys who are veterans who just want to blow through it and get right into the wide world can do so, and they can do so quickly But the folks who need a little time to figure out how things work or want to spend a little more time figuring out the different skills and classes and how all of that stuff works, you know, have some time to do that.
So let's get into the one that you probably have heard about many, many times, the Radiant AI system. Oh, Radiant AI. Tell us all about the Radiant AI system, Beat.
The Radiant AI system, it's the idea is that we're not scripting precisely what a character is supposed to be doing at any given moment. So we don't tell an NPC, you need to walk over into this room and sit in this chair for this long. Then you need to get up from that chair. You need to go stand here. Then you need to walk over here and talk to this person. That would be going through and scripting what an NPC is supposed to do. What we do instead is we tell an NPC, it's 11 o'clock at night. You need to go to bed. And the NPC will go and find their bed and sleep in it. We tell the NPC, it's 9 o'clock. You need to go to work and open your shop. And the NPC will figure out wherever they are. They'll find the door they're supposed to walk out to get to the door they're supposed to unlock to go into their shop and sell their stuff and behave like they're supposed to behave. So the difference is that we're not going through and in a very strict, regimented fashion planning out every single action, but we're giving them basic goals and letting the NPC's AI figure out how to achieve those goals. So the difference to the player, it's not like you're going to jump into the world and say, wow, the AI in this game is amazing. It's supposed to be more of a thing where you go into a town and you see NPCs walking around, or you see folks walking through the street who stop and start talking to each other, or you see a guy running through town because he's a courier for the newspaper and he's in a hurry to get to where he needs to be. All of that stuff is just supposed to feel very natural. We don't really want the AI to sort of jump out and slap you in the face and say, hey, look at me. We want you to live your life in this world and to play whatever kind of character you want to play and feel like everything that's happening around you is realistic. It's the way it's supposed to be. Whereas in Morrowind, it was basically, statues of information. This guy is standing right here, and you talk to him, and he tells you all these things, and right. That's basically that. We just want the world to feel more lived in, more vibrant, and to feel more natural to the player. So Radiant AI is a really fancy name for the way that we try and do that in a way that feels right to the player. It does create situations where there are some moments in the game where a character will do something, an NPC will do something, and you're like, wow, that was really cool. Like, you're fighting somebody and you drop a sword, like the NPC will run over and pick up the sword and start hitting you with it, or you'll start attacking somebody on the run out of the room and you'll say, where are they going? And then you see them and they run into their house and get a weapon and come back to fight you. They do things that you'll notice from time to time, but in general, we would just want them to be a part of this experience and act in a way that feels right to you, whatever that means.
Yeah, from my point of view, when I heard about the Radiant AI system, I was thinking, from a development standpoint, that's great. I mean, if you spend a lot of time really making the Radiant AI system work well, then instead of you spending all of your time scripting all these NPCs, you can just give them attributes and sort of tell them what their priorities are, and then they'll do it. And that allows you to just add so many more people and just really spend as much time.
Well, and it makes it so that every time you walk into a town or you walk into a store or you walk into someplace, it's not always exactly the same. And that's really the point, is that if it always feels like it's exactly the same every day all the time, then it's going to feel really stale. But just slight variations here and there, depending on what day of the week it is, and they decide to go to church because it's Sunday. Like, little stuff like that goes a long way to making the world feel very new and different, as opposed to everybody in this town always stands in exactly the same place. They always say exactly the same thing. Nothing ever happens. Like, that's what we're trying to avoid and get away from. And I think, for the most part, we've done a really good job of it. We've had to scale some things back, mostly because NPCs were doing stuff that were like, whoa, what do you, no, don't do that, what do you, it's like, it's a lot like raising children, you give them a certain set of implements and a little bit of free time, and who knows what untold destruction they'll create. So it's been scaling things back and like, oh, no, don't let them do that. Like, okay, well, in this situation, you can't shut some things off to keep them from being crazy, but it's been a great experience. And again, it's something that we hope to be able to build on, as opposed to having to, destroy and start all over again, that we can use this going forward into other stuff we're doing.
With the radio, I mean, would you think of, some people asked about licensing it, even if it's...
No, we don't, item? We don't get into licensing our tech. No.
The radio is just for you guys.
That's right, just for us. If you want it, go buy the game that's got it.
So for the actual NPCs, Peter Molyneux used to say and boast on his game that he used to be able to kill every single person in the game except for one. Like, well, the NPCs also sort of had a similar way of living in. Oh, what was the Xbox game he did? I forgot. I can't even remember.
Fable?
Fable, right. I couldn't even remember. But he used to boast, oh, the NPCs, they sort of would do something similar. They would go about their own lives and do their own things. And you can kill them all, except for one, and finish the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work in Morrowind? I mean, we were talking a little bit about killing. If you wanted to kill the king and the guards, you could try, but eventually they would be pretty lenient of you, but eventually they'd get pretty pissed off.
So in Morrowind, you could do that. In Morrowind, you could kill everybody in the game except for one guy and still finish the main quest. In Oblivion, the problem that we were running into is that things outside of your control could find NPCs getting killed. And there's nothing worse than having your game break when you did nothing wrong. So you have an essential character that needs to give you something or needs to play some part in a main quest role, and suddenly he's dead on a road somewhere, and you're like, what happened? Like, what do you mean I got to start my game over? I didn't do anything. So what we've done is we've flagged essential characters, and they actually get a little icon whenever you talk to them or interact with them. They get a little crown symbol. And it's basically our way of saying, this person can't be killed. Because if they die, it breaks something. You know, you can't continue on this quest line or this quest line. So we've moved away from the kill everybody in the world because we don't want things ruining the player's experience that's outside of your control. Because it's one of those things that may sound cool. Hey, it's a living world, and this guy can die and have nothing to do with it until your game gets messed up because of it. And then you're like, what? Well, this is stupid. I got to reload and start. Well, like I didn't do anything wrong. And then it happens once, and then it happens again and again. And so those guys can be knocked unconscious. So you can still attack them and fight them, but they get knocked unconscious, and after a period of time, they'll get back up. So, you know, we don't do the kill every NPC in the world simply because we don't want NPCs getting killed by accident by you or by accident by some other NPC that ruins your gameplay experience. So, but you can still, there's plenty of things to kill and lots of havoc to be wrought if you so choose.
Yeah, I think that's a fine balance because it's still a game.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like, which is more fun, killing everyone in the game or finishing the game or being able to do what you're trying to do?
Well, you know, it's one of those things like people say, well, you know, ooh, can NPCs steal from you and stuff? And it's like, well, you know, that sounds fun until you have a house full of stuff and come back and then half your stuff is gone and you're like, all my stuff is gone. This game is broken. Oh, no, an NPC actually stole from you. That's stupid. How am I supposed to, you know, like, unless you leave a note on the door, you know, thanks for leaving your stuff out. I stole half of it. There's no way to let the player know. And so it's like, why do that? Why give the player the feeling that their game is broken by doing something that is invisible to them, that they have no ability to see or stop or take any part in? So things like that ruin the player's experience, we tend to avoid.
Yeah, that sounds like, actually, that reminds me of way back in the day when I was playing, I think it was Ultimate 2 or Ultimate 3, way back when on the Apple II Plus, and there was a ring you had to get at the very end of the game, and there was a thief, an NPC, that would steal from you randomly. And when it stole from you, it was gone forever out of the game. So you get this one ring, which you needed to complete the game. You bump into a thief. They randomly steal something. They stole that ring. Game over.
Yeah.
That was it.
Terrific.
Exactly. It's like, okay. And to this day, I remember that because it was so devastating when that actually happened.
Yeah. We believe in avoiding the negative, and something like that is definitely a negative.
I'm going to get to fan questions in a sec, but let's get to the horse. Everyone wants to know about the horse. Is it customizable? What does it do? How does it work?
There are so all of the different towns in the game sell a different kind of horse. I think there's 5 different kinds of horse in the game, and they vary based on how fast they run, how much health they have, because, you know, you can damage a horse by jumping off of cliffs and it'll take damage, or animals can attack it, and they'll defend themselves, or they'll they can go off running and flee. So you can get different size horses with different health and different speeds. You can customize them. We're gonna do some downloadable content for horse armor, so you know you can get some cool armor to put on your horse. They're largely they serve several purposes. Number one is they're a faster means of traveling on foot when you want to go out and explore in the world, or you don't want to fast travel, but you need to get to point A from point A to point B, or you don't even have the option to fast travel because you only know about the major cities from a fast travel standpoint. So everywhere else in the world, you have to go out and discover before you can fast travel there. So horses allow you to get there faster, and it's also a prestige thing. It's one of the things we actually track under your accomplishments. So we have a big stats page in the game that tracks all the things you've been doing, how many things you've killed, how many things you've stolen, and we track, you know, how many houses you've own, how many horses you own, and you can have them stabled in different towns, and if you fast travel, they'll fast travel with you and get put in the stable. So, you know, it's partially a prestige thing because they're not cheap, but it's partially a convenience thing. You know, you get bigger and better horses and you can travel around faster and they'll take more damage. So if you're being crazy and jumping off of boulders and the horse keeps taking damage, you know, it'll go longer before it dies.
And can you actually do combat on the horse?
No, you have to get off. So the horse is basically just a means of transportation. If you want, things can attack you while you're on horseback, but you have to get off the horse to be able to do anything. It just, it wholly unbalanced the combat system when you have to have to incorporate what do you do about guys riding around on a horse who have, you know, a completely different type of speed, and it just changed the combat system entirely and made it a completely different combat system than everybody being on foot. So you got to get off the horse to fight.
So with that being said, actually, I do want to get into the combat system a little just for those who haven't played this game as much, because it's a pretty interesting system, because you can, as you said earlier, it's that, you know, most people are pretty much ingrained nowadays. It's like you're either a fighter and then you go with weapons, or you are a thief and then you can do lockpicking, or you can do magic and that's it. But this game, which is one of the best things about this game, is you can do everything. I mean, you can... I was doing everything. Like in the first 5 minutes of this game, you're lockpicking, using magic, and killing things with a sword and sword and shield. And if you just want to go through a little bit how the system works.
So it plays very much like a first-person shooter. The controls will be fairly similar for anybody who plays a first-person shooter. And what we do that's different than before is we put everything that happens on the screen under the control of the player. So you decide when you're going to attack, when you're going to block, how you're going to attack. And if you see your sword hit the target or you see your arrow hit the target, then it hits. We don't do any to-hit rolls like you see in some traditional RPGs. So when you see something happen on the screen, it happens. But what happens when that event takes place is based entirely on the stats of your character and the stats of whatever it is that you happen to be fighting. So if I'm really bad at using a sword, every time I hit somebody with a sword, it'll do damage, but it'll do very little damage because I'm not very good at it. Conversely, if I'm really good at magic, every time I cast a magic spell, it'll be much more powerful. It'll do a lot more damage than it would for somebody who isn't very good. So your skills still and abilities still determine your success or failure. They just don't determine when things happen, so that everything that happens on the screen makes sense to the player. And the idea is that you can easily switch between we don't have, as we did in Morrowind, we don't have sort of a weapon mode and a magic mode where you have to switch between modes. So you can be carrying a sword and a shield and cast magic on the fly. It just makes it a little bit more seamless. It makes it easier, you know, on both the Xbox and the PC. We allow you to hotkey items on the Xbox. It's you use the D-pad on the PC, you use numbers, and you can switch between different weapon sets. So you can have a bow and arrow equipped, and with the press of a button, you can change to having your sword and shield out, or to changing what magic you have ready, or you can drink a potion really quick. So we just tried to streamline to make it easier and more accessible to the player, and have it be a much more visceral experience. You know, we really wanted to capture guys really bashing on each other, that when somebody clocks you with the weapon, you really feel like it. You know, it shakes. If you're on the Xbox, you get the rumble in the pad. You know, we wanted to change the way that works, to make it a more engaging experience, and to be honest, to make sure that combat didn't drag out forever and ever and ever. Like, you know, like we want combat to to take an appropriate amount of time where you don't just feel like, okay, just, you know, kill me already. What? I don't even care. Just get this battle over with. We definitely spent a lot of time. The system that is in the game is actually the third one that we worked on before we settled on it, just trying to find the right combination of what's under the player's control, how the character stats determines success or failure, all of those things. We feel like we've hit on a system that works pretty well, and so far the feedback has been that it feels really natural.
And the Radiant AI system, is that used for the monsters as well? Because I did see the monsters beating up each other several times.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a slightly different thing, but that goes more to just, creatures or NPCs will fight realistically based on what they have. So it may have been in your game or somebody else's game where I was watching he was fighting the Goblin Witch, who has the ability to cast magic and also has a staff. So he's standing back with his bow and trying to take her out from afar, and she's shooting lightning bolts and fire bolts at him, and he's dodging around. And eventually she runs out of charges for her staff, and her magicka gets so low that she can't cast magic. So she instantly switches combat and comes running at the player because she can't cast magic. So she switches over to the weapons that she's got and runs up to try and fight him that way. And, of course, he switches to his sword and easily dispatches her because the goblin isn't as good at melee combat as it is at magic. Mm-hmm. But, they will adjust and change what it is they're doing. If you see an NPC with a bow and arrow that's shooting you from afar, as you run up to it, it won't just keep trying to use its bow and arrow. It will change over and pull out a melee weapon and start hitting you with that at close range, as opposed to just, determinedly sticking with a long-range weapon. So they do adjust to what the player is doing and try and give a realistic feel to the combat in terms of the way they behave.
Cool. So this was one of the biggest questions I got. I asked a couple of the fans and the members of the site to ask me some questions. And one of the most often asked questions was the question of balance, because some people felt that in Morrowind, after about 20, 25 hours, you were nay and invincible in a way. And you could really go around just killing everything.
The reason for that is there were a lot of it was multifold. One of them is because of the kinds of items that we make available to the player at different stages. And another is just the way that we allow you to progress your skills. So the way that we address those in Oblivion is being more careful about how much it is you have to do of something in order to progress from your current level to the next one, and varying the amount of it you have to do between 13 and 14 versus 35 and 36 versus, 70 and 71. So as you go up that curve, you have to do much, much more in that skill to get it to move up another notch. Mm-hmm. And then from an item or weapon standpoint, those tend to be the things that really unbalance the game, where you get a weapon or a piece of armor or something that basically makes you just much more powerful than you should be at that stage. So we address that in Oblivion by doing much, much more of the leveled stuff. So we don't put a lot of specific things in the world. Most of what we put in the world is a leveled thing, so that at level 2, if you go to this area and you kill this creature, then you're going to get this kind of thing. But if you come back and you didn't fight the creature there until level 15, you would fight a much tougher creature that would give you a different kind of weapon that's more appropriate for a level 15. So we're just trying to avoid having certain items in the game where you can exploit a game system. Basically you make yourself invisible for 20 seconds, you give yourself boots of blinding speed, and you run past everything real quick, grab this ultra-powerful artifact, and run back out. We try and adjust that much more so that if you manage to do that, great, but you're still getting a level 2 weapon for your level 2 character, not something that is more appropriate for a level 40 character. So it's a lot of that sort of thing.
So let's get to the hardcore fan questions. And some of these you've actually already answered. But one, actually, this is a good question. Are you going to have widescreen resolutions out of the box for the PC?
Yeah, we support whatever resolution your video card supports, we support. So if you support, essentially the equivalent of 720p on a video card, we'll support it as well. It's entirely based on your video card.
Cool. So monster spawning. One of the issues with Oblivion is that monsters always seem to spawn in nearly, or if not the exact same place, every single time. least that's what they said here. Not in a
in Morrowind.
In Morrowind, yeah. Not in Oblivion. And in Oblivion, how does it work with monster spawning?
We respawn stuff in locations after a certain number of days. I don't remember what the number of days is. Mm-hmm. It may be 2 or 3, something like that. So if you go to a dungeon and you go back a day later, it'll still be a dungeon full of dead stuff that you already killed. As far as spawning back things in the exact same locations, I don't know how we handle that, if it's always in the same place. But our creatures move around a lot more than they used to, so you could play through the same save game and go into a thing and go into a location and you'll find NPCs at completely different locations. I've actually done this. One of the first dungeons you can go to is Vilverant, which is right when you come outside and you see that dock in the water. You go right across there and there's an alien ruin there. And that was one of the things that I play tested a bunch when I was playing the game, because I was like, you know, this is what a lot of people are going to do. They're going to come out and go this dungeon. And I kept playing through it to see how it played. And the way it played through was always different for me. One time the guy who was a lot of the times is up at the top, he was down somewhere taking a nap, or, you know, he was walking through a different part of the dungeon. And so the combat situations would change, because one time through I was able to pick them off one by one, but then another time I got detected and I had 2 or 3 guys chasing after me just based on where they were as they were wandering around. So it does change based on the packages of each of the creatures or NPCs as they move around the world. So hopefully it won't always feel exactly the same.
So the monsters in the dungeons, they do respawn over time. And with that being said, do treasures respawn in the dungeons?
Yeah. Oh, okay. We're resetting the location, basically. So we're resetting it again so that if you come back, you know, at some point later in the distance, it is essentially a dungeon for you to explore all over again. Not every single, if I'm not mistaken, not every single location works like that, but most locations work like that.
And how does that work with your level? You know, will the dungeons increase?
Every time you come in, it changes. When you load into that area, it does a check on what level your character is at that point, and it'll change based on what the level
is. So it'll always be a challenge. It won't be like walking through.
Although it's one of those things that I don't... It's something that gets talked about a lot, but it's not the most folks aren't going to see that, because there are 200 dungeons out in the world. So the question is, like, most folks aren't going to choose to go back through the same one over and over again. They're going to try one of the other 190 whatever that they haven't played through yet. And there's an awful lot of them out there. So the majority of folks aren't going to have to worry about going back through the same dungeon, because there's so many of them out there.
These aren't the majority of folks' questions.
No, but even those folks, you know, by the time you get through 200 dungeons and do everything else, you've spent a serious number of hours. So to go back through previous ones is... Yeah, I mean, you're talking about you've played the game for 300 hours now.
Oh, we got people who have played it 1,500 hours.
Oh, sure they have.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in Morrowind, if an NPC attacked you right in front of the guards would never do anything about it. But if a player attacked an NPC, the guards were all over you. Will the guards in Oblivion enforce justice on behalf of the PC this time too?
Yes. It's actually a trick I use a lot. I get attacked. I go into some place like doing a quest and... Uh-huh. You know, I try and board the ship where the pirates are, and the pirates start chasing me. So I can either stand and defend myself, or I just run like a little girl until I get back to where the guards are, and the guards jump in and start laying down some justice. And I don't know why they were attacking me, sir. I'm completely blameless. And I go back and finish what I was doing. So, yeah, guards will come to your aid whenever you're being attacked whether it's an NPC or a creature or whatever the case may be.
So another person writes, I heard that the guards in Oblivion will be able to detect stolen goods and will confront you for carrying them. Can you please explain to us? Is that correct?
If you have a bounty on your head of some amount, achieved a certain level of bounty before a guard will even bother trying to come get you. Mm-hmm. So if you get caught in the act and somebody calls for help, then a guard will come to help. But if you manage to get away and you have a small bounty on your head, it's not like every guard in the world suddenly starts chasing you down on sight. You're a common thief with a bounty of 10 on your head, so they don't care. But if you get arrested or you get caught and you have stolen items on you, then it doesn't matter why you got caught, whether you were a mass murderer or whether you just got caught stealing an apple out of the tavern. They will take anything that you have stolen off of you when they arrest you. But they don't just, as you're walking by them, they don't just say, hey, that guy's got stolen stuff, I should go. It doesn't work like that. It's based on the amount of crimes that you've committed before guards really start chasing you down as a wanted person.
So are there traveling merchants in Oblivion mm-hmm. that will buy and sell from different shops, or how do they work?
There are NPCs that travel from town to town doing stuff. So you actually have, I know of at least one quest that's related to that. And NPCs from time to time will go to visit other NPCs in other towns. So, you know, you have a lady in one town who, you know, certain day every month goes to this other town and to visit a friend, and you can actually follow the NPC. You know, if you don't believe it, stand outside of her house on that day and you can walk right behind her. She walks all the way down the road and goes to that town and visits her friend and spends time there and then turns around. Yeah. You know, there's people who have dinner at their house and they have family members come over for dinner. So, so yeah, it definitely does happen. But for the most part, the folks that you buy and sell from have established. You're not just going to see like people setting up shop in the middle of town squares and so forth. There are established towns and stores where you buy and sell all your stuff.
So one of the questions I have here is, if you kill guards in a town, how much time before they're replaced?
I'm not sure what the period of time is. Basically, the way it works is if it's a character that you come across that's named, then that character won't respawn. The characters we respawn over time in certain cases are like Coral Guard or Skin Grad Guard, where it's not a named person, but they serve a function. And we'll respawn some of those guys to make sure that we can always keep order in a town, and it's not just, okay, I've killed all the guards, now I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. So the named folks, we don't respawn, but the unnamed ones, so to speak, we do.
And the merchant skill, has it been improved so that you don't have to buy and sell one item at a time in order to advance the skill?
Yeah, so last time it was kind of a transaction base. This time it's based on gold. So it doesn't matter whether you're selling one item at a time or lots of items at a time. We actually are tracking the amount of gold exchanged between you and the merchant as to whether or not your skill is increased. So selling one item at a time isn't going to help. It's always how much gold is changing hands.
And with armor and magic, I have a question here. How much will wearing armor hinder spellcasting in Oblivion, and to what extent will perks of high armor skill eventually negate this penalty?
So you do get a penalty to your spell effectiveness if you're a spellcaster wearing armor and you're not good at wearing that armor. And once you get higher in that armor class, it will stop affecting your spell effectiveness. But up until that point, wearing, say, you know, being a spellcaster and wearing heavy armor is going to affect how effective your spells are, mm-hmm. And reduce that effectiveness by some amount based on your skill mm-hmm. and what it is you're wearing.
So, and you get the skill and armor just by wearing it, just by going about.
Actually, you get it mostly from like wearing it in combat. So, getting hit while wearing heavy armor improves your heavy armor skill, or getting hit while wearing light armor improves your light armor skill.
So eventually you could have heavy armor and being a spellcaster.
Well, absolutely. And especially, I mean, if you choose it, right? So if you choose heavy armor and destruction magic as two of your major skills, heavy armor will automatically start at a higher level, mm-hmm. as will your destruction magic, and you can get really good at wearing both. That's the battle mage.
That's what I was doing.
That's right.
So how about the quest log? A lot of people were saying in Morrowind that it was getting a little crazy, and they actually had to keep a notebook just to keep track of all their quests.
Yeah, we do a much better job of organizing and presenting information to the player. So we have basically three sections of your map / quest part of your journal are dedicated to quests. So one of them is a tab that tracks all of your completed quests. So if you ever want to go back and look at all the stuff that you finished, it's in there. The second one is all of your current quests. So any quest that you've accepted will be added, and it's basically you see the whatever that quest is called and a brief description of it. If you select it, you'll get the active quest tab, which gives you all of the information you've gathered from anybody in chronological order, starting with the most recent, going to the oldest information, so to speak. And making a quest your active quest also gives you the ability to press the map button and have on a map we switch over to the world map and we give you a marker that shows if the quest has a marker. Some quests do, some quests don't. A marker that tells you this is where you need to go to, for the next step of your quest. So it's much more streamlined. It's much easier to keep track of what you've done, what you haven't done. It's much easier to keep track of all the information you've gathered just by clicking on a quest and seeing the full list. It's much, much better and easier to follow than before.
So one person asks, I've heard about a disarm feature and the snow-cold neck strike feature with hand-to-hand combat. Could you explain those?
Those are basically those are different abilities that your power attacks gain based on the skill of your weapon. So as you get better and better in blade or in blunt or whatever it may be, your power attack gains a chance of doing these different things. So a chance to disarm or a chance to do this critical strike thing where you hit the person's neck and paralyze them. Mm-hmm. But that's like that's uber. You have to get basically 100 in that skill in order to have a chance of doing that. And it's not that you perform a different move or attack. You just do a standard power attack, and your power attack will change based on which direction you move. So, for example, early on, when you move side to side, your power attack doesn't do anything special. But eventually you get this disarm strike where you do the spinning 360 attack, and that's where you have a chance to knock the guy's weapon out of his hand. And you'll see it. You know, it goes falling down to the ground. And again, so that power attack, I think it's moving forward. It's either moving forward or moving backwards, but it's a power attack that simply has a chance of doing this special thing. So it's not that you're performing a new move, it's just that your attack is doing something it couldn't before.
And I have a question here. So why did they remove shadows from all objects when they made a point of marketing it for the past year?
It wasn't something that was removed as much as it was something that never made it in. It was an idea we had about something we wanted to try. And we showed a glimpse of it in the E3 demo as, you know, something we showed off in the prison cell of that demo. But that's actually the only place it was ever implemented or shown. It's never been in the game in any other part. It's, you know, obviously something we would have liked to have tried, but the system itself didn't work. So we had to come up with a different system for the way we handle different types of shadows in the game that basically allowed us to ship a viable game that handled shadows in a way that was appropriate. So,
but there are shadows in the game.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Your character can cast shadows. They're, you know, shadows for, you know, you. I mean, having played the game, it's probably something you didn't even notice that there was something that was like quote unquote missing. It, the game looks and feels exactly like it should. It's just shadows are probably the most expensive thing that you can do from a frame rate standpoint, and so. Even with the current generation, we had to come up with a different way for how we do it. And on the PC side, it's actually something that you can turn on and off. So as you're trying to customize your level of performance, it may be something that you turn shadow off on your character or on or on different types of objects like grass, as to whether or not you want those things to be there. But it's not by any means. Anybody who walks up and play it is going to say, wow, it looks great, but there's no like everything looks like it's supposed to look. So I think it's largely a non-issue.
And the clipping issues, talking about graphics. In Morrowind, there were problems where monsters would sometimes get stuck and train in objects, and then you just kill them easily.
Yeah, our pathfinding system is significantly better than it has been in any previous game. So I would say that shouldn't be an issue.
And now there you have here, I mean, I know because I've been using it, it's like just how customizable is your character's appearance besides the facial features? In other words, if you can you create a pale, skinny thief or an overweight merchant, is it not just the face, is it the whole body? Like, how much of the character's appearance?
No, the stuff you can customize is just the face. We don't allow you to do really fat, thin. That tends to affect a lot more armor sets and so forth. Mm-hmm. So the amount that we allow you to do that is only the head and the face, just for those reasons, because we can't create art that fits to every, you know, every variation of how big your stomach is or your chest is.
So this is actually one of my questions too. Okay. But the updates for new content. Mm-hmm. I mean, since you guys are releasing simultaneously on the 360 and the PC, How is that going to work? Is it going to be updates that are from live and marketplace? In other words, how are you planning on releasing new content? You were talking a little bit like, oh, okay, we might release, was it armor for the horses?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it just going to be little pieces here and there, drips and drabs? Are you going to do like major patches or entire expansions, you know?
We currently have no plans to do expansion as a downloadable thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as downloadable content, we're looking to do small but fun things to add to the game that have some significance and some value to the player. Things that we would like to do that are cool. You know, as I said, our content folks haven't really been working on any new content for a while because we've been content complete for a while. So, you know, once we sort of lock off the game from any changes, we free those folks up to work on some new ideas for some new things that we can make available. The plan is to have at least one, if not more, of those available when the game comes out and to put them out on a regular basis going forward for both platforms at the same time.
Okay.
What exactly they'll be, we had some things that we know we're going to do, but one of the things we found is that some of the stuff that we had planned on doing, when much like stuff we do in the game, sounded good on paper, or we went to implement it in the game, and suddenly it either wasn't good enough or it wasn't going to work right or whatever the case may be, we end up not doing it. So we're not going to talk too much about what those things are until we're sure that mm-hmm. they're going to work, we're going to be able to do them, yeah. So on and so forth.
But they will be released simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah, that's the plan, is to have them both for PC and Xbox, you know, a minimal cost, you know, stuff that you can add into your existing game.
Right. So a lot of people had some questions about the hand-to-hand combat, and some people asked, as you get higher and higher skill, will you have new combos instead of just like a 1-2-3? Will you be able to do like backhands, uppercuts, advanced arts, martial arts?
Yeah, so we changed the power attack that you can do based on the skill in whatever type of attack it is, whether it's a blade or hand-to-hand. So for the hand-to-hand stuff, there's new animations.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not getting into like, you know, martial arts moves and so forth. It is hand-to-hand fisticuffs. So you get some different attack animations, some different things you can do,
mm-hmm.
whether it's using a sword or using a warhammer or whatever the case may be, different types of power attacks. But that's the extent of it. We're not doing sort of crazy combos and stuff like that. It's not, you know, Mortal Kombat or
right.
Dead or Alive or whatever.
Are there going to be mini bosses in every dungeon like in the E3 video?
A lot of them do, yeah. Most of our dungeons have a boss creature
mm-hmm.
With a boss chest and that kind of stuff. So
right.
Most of them
right.
do. What it is will vary right. from dungeon to dungeon. It may just be a tougher version of a certain type of creature that happens to be inhabiting that. It could be an NPC type. But yeah, most of them do have some kind of a boss.
And the villagers, if you kill someone in front of them, do they react differently to
yeah,
you?
Absolutely.
They will run away screaming
yeah.
and be scared? Or
oh, absolutely. Well, depends on the type of NPC that witnesses it. So if it's you attack and kill an assuming that before you kill the villager, you're attacking them, some NPCs will react and go to defend that NPC and will go either pull out a weapon or run to go grab a weapon and come back and fight you or start casting magic. Some of them will run away because they're not predisposed to fighting or they're, you know, they know they can't win. But afterwards, yeah, they'll definitely treat you differently. If you have a big bounty on your head, most respectable folks simply they won't talk to you at all. They won't give you any information. If you go and serve your time, you know they will still maybe not think quite as highly of you as they would have had you not killed somebody that they know or that they like.
Someone asked about looting towns and houses, and that some of the last Elder Scrolls games that, you know, inside the garbage piles and the barrels, you'd find, you know, something inside of all of them. Is that increased or has that been improved so that there's like maybe they found it a little like not so realistic that you're constantly finding gold or something valuable in people's
yeah.
garbages?
I mean, it's definitely still takes place. I think one of the things we do more in Oblivion than we've ever done before is we just have more random junk in the world, something you probably
right.
noticed when you were playing. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that's like, you know, you find a paintbrush. Like, what am I supposed to do with this? Well, nothing. We didn't tell you how to take it, but it's, you know, it's in the world. It's one of the thousands and thousands of things we've populated the world with from, you know, just having miscellaneous objects. So, you know, we try to be very careful and smart about, you know, not just putting big piles of gold into random barrels sitting in the middle of town. But, you know, every now and then you search 20 barrels. Maybe the 21st one has two gold pieces in it or something like that. But, no, you're not going to be searching garbage and finding large piles of gold. But we do try and hide, you know, stuff here and there. And the level designers like to have fun and put things in certain places to say, you know, if somebody's going to put this much effort into searching around, every now and then we'll put something worth finding.
So the dungeons, are all the dungeons evil, or are they all harmful to you? In other words, is there any friendly dungeons or like merchants hanging out? And,
no.
And they're all mean.
Yeah, pretty much. Dungeons are dungeons. They serve one purpose, which is for you to go and have fun and kill stuff and take loot off of them.
Okay, almost done with all these.
Okay.
Let's see. One person has, is the training of skills going to be more developed in Oblivion? Could I actually spar in the guild houses?
Can you spar in the guild houses? I'm trying to remember if we have any places where we allow you to spar with somebody. You can train in some of the guild houses. You can actually, every now and then, this is kind of a little Easter egg, every now and then you can actually improve your skills just by watching somebody train.
Ooh.
So you can find somebody who's training in a certain type of weapon, or you can, there's people that'll be sparring, and actually if you watch them spar, you actually get a skill increase, because it's like you've sort of observed what it is that they're doing and picked up some tips on how to fight better. But I don't think we've got folks for you to spar with, for you personally to spar with. If you're looking for somebody to spar with, go fight in the arena.
The arena,
yeah,
of course. So weapons, when they break now, do they actually break? Can you have, like, now using the hilt of a sword, or
is it once they're broken, you can't even equip it. It's just
gone.
It's not gone. It's just in your inventory and broken. There's no point in letting you pull out a broken sword. It's broken.
It's broken.
So it appears in your item with a little broken icon, and you can't use it until you get it repaired.
Will the weapons be able to clash mid-swing?
Yes.
And is there recoil?
Yeah. So that's part of combat is, you know, the way you block and attack and picking the right moment to attack somebody, and have them be staggered, or if you block their attack, then they'll be staggered. I actually don't think that we do anything where swords clash. Basically what happens is you both hit at the same time, but it's not like the swords hit and nothing happens to anybody. If you swing and they swing and neither one of you is attempting to block, then you'll both hit and you'll both recoil and get staggered or whatever. But we don't do like, oh, these two swords hit in the air so nobody takes any damage and this happens. It's all based on attacks and blocks.
And will the inhabited areas run the gamut from small camps to full castles, or is it all just sort of big towns, big cities?
No, I mean, we have big cities, and then we've got, you know, smaller towns that'll be a much smaller collection of buildings that'll have maybe, you know, a small tavern, a little, you know, a couple of houses, a store or two. You got the really small places, like just a little encampment out here or a little tavern out in the wilderness over there. So they do run the gamut. Yeah, and then, you know, some of the larger cities do have castles. But, you know, it's a little bit of everything.
So I have a few more.
Okay.
Let's see. Monsters. Monsters, monsters, monsters. How many different types are there? Or is it sort of like, you know, when I was playing, I saw, I think, three different types of goblins. There was sort of like the magic goblin.
Yeah, I don't remember what the number is. It's 40-some, 50-some, somewhere in there. But that doesn't include all the variables, right? So
right,
we have
that's what I was
goblin
getting to.
is a creature type, but you have goblin shamans, goblin berserkers, goblin witches. So there's various types within each creature type. You know, we have liches, but we have several different types of liches, skeletons. So there's lots of stuff. And that also includes all the different creatures from Oblivion that you'll see. So all the different types of demons that you'll see as you explore Oblivion or face the demons that are coming out of the gates of Oblivion into the world.
So what can you tell us about Oblivion? I know it's all hush, hush, secret, secret stuff.
You know, it's not like, oh, this is the coolest thing you've ever seen and we can't let you're not worthy to see it until the game comes out. It's more of a, with Morrowind, there weren't a whole lot of secrets once the game came out. Like, mm-hmm. everybody had already seen pretty much everything about the game. Everywhere you could go and everything you do could do had been revealed by somebody who had played it in the preview. And the idea was that for this, we just simply wanted to have there be some part of the game that people were seeing for the first time, both the public as well as the reviewers. Like, let you play everything before the game comes out, and then once it comes out, you know, there's less of a wow factor because you've gotten a chance to see everything. So it's more just let's have there be something that folks aren't seeing or doing before the game comes out to give them something to look forward to.
So how did the achievements work for the 360? I saw, and you actually had an interesting story, that you guys actually put 100 in originally. But
yeah, we had a ton. It was 75, 100, somewhere around there, but we had a ton of them. And we cap you at 50, so we scaled back what we did. But originally, the first pass we did, you know, we just sort of, this is sometime last year, we said, we'll just do 6. Or 7 or whatever, you know, we'll do one for the main quest and for one for each of the guilds, and that'll be that. But then as we started playing 360 games and we realized like how effective they could be at enticing people to play the game more, and you know, be little breadcrumbs or along the path, we changed up our and went the other direction, which is let's have little stuff that you can get all along the way, so that every step along the way, on whether you're doing this or this or this, there is incentive to go just a little bit farther to get that next achievement and dole it out that way. And not have it be something where, as we were discussing in there right. before, it's like, you know, you play game X and you get 1,000 points after you played 5
right,
minutes,
right.
or you play the game for 30 hours and you've mm-hmm. got like 100 achievement points. Like, that's not any fun.
But do you either. Think it's actually feasible to get...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Even for the average person, or only for the
average person, so long as they spend the time to do it. I mean, it's not anything that's skill based. It's mm-hmm. just perseverance. It's how much you're going to do. Mm-hmm. If you don't join the Thieves Guild and do all the Thieves Guild stuff, you're not going to get those achievement points. Like, doesn't matter how good you are, hardcore you are, how many hours you play the game. You know, some of them are inherently locked to certain things you will do in the game.
So this thing I keep hearing is like, okay, the game has 16 square miles, 16 square miles. What does that actually mean? Because some games, like I'm playing Dragon Quest VIII, there's a thing that tells you how many miles you've gone.
Mm-hmm.
But in that game, like, you know, walking 1 minute is a mile.
Right.
You know, and you by the time you finish that game, you've gone thousands of miles.
Yeah.
So explain how that, you know, because it's sort of...
We mostly give that to get people to stop asking us how big the world is, because our fans are so obsessed with that number because they think it means something that right. they just ask over and over again. So we have to give them an answer. But it doesn't, to your point, it doesn't mean a whole lot until you see it in the game.
Right.
And see, like, you, what matters is the scale. What matters is the scale that you fit within that. World and how long it takes you to get from point A to point B, and how much stuff there is to do between point A and point B. Like that, what matters is, you know, how the world is created and how much there is to do between those points. Not whether or not the distance you just walked was a quarter of a mile or half a mile or 10 miles. Like that's largely irrelevant. It has more to do with how the game feels, how big the game feels, and how much there is to do as you walk around. So. You know, the thing I always like is when people come and start to play and they start panning around the world map to see how big it is. And they're like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Like, that's all I've done is that one little area? You know, that's like, you know, when you sort of feel like, okay, we definitely made it big enough, because people are like, I'll never get to see all of this ever. Like, it's too big.
And if you do the main quest, like, what percentage, or do you actually get to see all the main sites, or how does it...
Oof. I mean, we send you around to quite a few places for the main quest. And we use not just the main quest, but all of the quests as a vehicle to get you out into the wilderness. So in the very beginning, we keep you so that you can fast travel between a few main points. But then we start sending you out to places that you only know about, you haven't been to. And so you have to walk there or travel there. And we do that quite a bit to get you exploring different parts of the world. So if you choose, you can find new places to go, whether it's, you know, a town you've never seen or been to, or... you know, dungeons that you didn't know were there, or a shrine that, you know, does some cool thing that you didn't realize. So it's, you know, we use the quest to get you out into the world and then let you decide how much exploring out there you want to do.
So I always have to ask this, because everyone asks this. Okay. And you know this is what's coming. Everyone's asking, so when is it going to be released?
Very soon.
I know.
Very soon. I mean, we are, you know, a couple of weeks away probably from letting folks know the exact date it'll be out. Mm-hmm. We have the date in mind. I am supremely confident that we are going to be out on that date. But we have said all along that the game isn't done until it's done, even if you're really, really close. We have seen enough games, both ours and others, that thought they were finished and then found this one thing that it turns out is going to take them quite a while to fix. And, you know, if we move by a few days, that's slipping. So we don't want to provide a date that we're going to have to move at all. We want to provide a date when we know it's shipping that day, it's going to be in stores this week, like, get ready to go buy it. And if we just feel like we're tempting the gods to come down and say, oh, you think you're done? Like, you know, try that on for size. How do you like that? They go, no! Now we're scrambling, and yeah, so we've got our date. We are it looks like we are going to hit our date. Everything seems to be going very well, and so hopefully within the next couple of weeks we'll be able to give folks the date and let them know exactly when it is. They can go to play the game, but every day we draw that much closer.
And it's going to come out simultaneously for Mac, PC.
PC, Xbox.
I mean, PC, Mac, PC. Yeah, Mac, PC. No. PC, Xbox, and all regions?
I mean, you know, U.S. and Europe will be a couple days apart. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's simultaneously. It's a logistical trick to get all that on the exact same day. But, yeah, I mean, we're talking about within a couple of days at most.
That's great. So let's get to a few other quick things that Bethesda is working on, because you guys are doing two of the greatest licenses of all time, Fallout 3, which I know everyone's so excited about.
As are we.
Anything we're going to see? We're going to see stuff at E3 maybe?
Nope.
Nothing?
Mum's the word for a while. We don't believe in, you know, if we had our choice, we probably wouldn't have said anything about it yet, you know, much like Oblivion, where we didn't. You know, we had been working on it for quite a while before we ever said, hey, here's what we're doing, and here's some screenshots, like, this is what the game looks like, you know, here's... So, you know, we're treating Fallout with the same sort of approach that, you know, that this is our franchise, and we're acting as if, you know, we made the first two games. Like, this is, you know, we spend a certain amount of time, we spend a lot of effort in pre-production and making sure that, you know, we know how systems work, and we're not in a hurry to just quick get this game out the door. Like, it needs the appropriate amount of time and attention, and once we get it to a point where we have some things we can show and show folks what we're up to, we'll certainly let everybody know, but that time is not now.
But one of them that you were much further along is Star Trek, because you actually already announced, was it two games,
Star Trek Legacy for Xbox 360 and PC, and Tactical Assault for the two handhelds, DS and PSP.
And the handheld one, Tactical Assault, looked awesome so far.
Really excited about both of them. You know, that both are developers that have worked with this property before, that have done really good Star Trek games. Yeah, I mean, the Tactical Assault thing, you know, I'm super stoked about, because the Quicksilver guys, you know, the Starfleet Command stuff was great. And, you know, I'm a big, doing all this traveling for things like this. You know, I'm constantly sitting in airports and on planes with my PSP looking for something new to play and do. And there, you know, there aren't many really fun tactical games on the PSP. There's really close to none right now. So, yeah, I'm personally very excited about having that. And then the Mad Duck guys, who did Armada 2 and, you know, have done some really great stuff. And, you know, doing something that's a little different, you know, something that's a little bit more of a squad-based tactical game as opposed to an RTS. They have some really good ideas, and they're fairly good ways along the path. And, you know, those are two games we'll definitely be highlighting and showing at E3 this year.
Great. So I heard that in one previous interview that you've been playing through some of the Star Trek games. So
I, you know, when I was back at the Adrenaline Vault back in the day, Interplay was one of the accounts that I had to cover their titles. So I've played, you know, Star Trek Pinball it's the Starfleet Command stuff, and I played a little bit of Away Team and Elite Force. And,
oh, yeah. I mean, did you play the Star Trek? My favorite of all time is the DOS one, the 25th anniversary.
I never played that one, but I've heard from really the two, good. From both Todds at work that it was really good, and I never played it.
Really good.
Yeah.
It was basically, you know what it was, because it was lots of little, it was basically Star Trek episodes, classic too, which was even better.
Sure.
And you had little episodes, and you were playing them. You were Spock,
to do everything.
And Kirk. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. The one I remember the most, that stands out the most in my mind, is Secret of Vulcan Fury. Which is one of those things that never came out, but it was just talked about every year, and every year I saw it, and it looked so great. And I think DC Fontana was even involved in that one.
Huh.
And I was just looking forward to it year after year, and then suddenly it just blipped off the radar, and nothing ever happened. But, yeah.
Yeah, Star Trek Elite Force, that actually is also one of my absolute favorites. That was if you haven't played that, you actually owe yourself to it, especially if you're a Star Trek fan, because that is, not only is that a fun game, the storyline is really good. They get the alternate universe in there. They get, like, everything in that game.
Yep.
The Borg. And I love the tagline, set phasers on frag. The goofiest tagline ever for a game. So let's get quickly right back to Oblivion and wrap this up. So what is your favorite feature in Oblivion?
Oh, yeah. My favorite feature? I don't know if I have one. I mean, part of it is I'm just so close to it at this point. I mean, that's, I've spent however many, almost 4 years now with this game at every stage, you know, and I've done however many demos of it at this point and watched people play it so many times that, I love the graphics, honestly. I love the fact that even now, not just me, but people on the team will be playing the game. And we'll go and see something that they've just never seen before. You know, a stunning moment. They go into a dungeon and see some waterfall inside of some cave with pools and fog coming off the water. And, you know, it's just a jaw-dropping, like, you know, you put down the controller for a second and stare. I think it's not just because, you know, the game looks good, but it really does add a lot to the experience of the game and immersing you in this world. But, I mean, if there's one thing that I think I like the most, I think it's that... In general, we improved on every single section, every single part of the game from previous games to this one. That there's really no part of the game that I can play and say, I like the way this worked better in this game. Or I like, you know, once you play it and start to really get into it, it's kind of amazing how just that every single thing has been improved by some amount. And it all adds up to just a vastly... I mean, I'm unafraid of saying this is far and away the greatest game we've ever made, but bar none. And I think everybody to a woman on our team would say the same thing, that it is clearly the biggest undertaking we've ever done, and I think the end result is much, much better than any game we've ever made. And you know, we're really looking forward to, you know, it's like, you know, having two kids and watch my wife go through pregnancy twice. You know, women get at that stage at the end where they just want it out, right? They just want the baby out. You know, at this stage, we love it and, you know, we've shepherded it through this whole long process, but, you know, we really just want to get it out. Like, we've had it so long. We want to get it out there and let people experience it and play it. And, you know, thankfully we're in the final stage of that.
So I've heard, and I know people that have played the Elder Scrolls games for over 1,500 hours. What is the longest you've heard? And
I mean, 1,500, you know, is a number I've heard out there. I get all of the email to Bethesda comes basically to me, so we end up, you know, I end up answering a lot of emails from folks like that. But you know, it's not the number of hours that I enjoy as much as the impact that it has on people. You know, when you get an email from somebody who had, you know, some terrible disease or some bad surgery and they were laid up for months at a time, and, you know, talking about how Morrowind helped them get through that period by, you know, having something to focus on and play to take their mind off of what they were going through. Or, you know, I've had 60, 70-year-old grandmothers, you know, email me, tell them how much they love the game, and kids. And it's just the fact that it is, you know, so many people it has appealed to from so many different walks of life, whether it be hardcore or casual or old or young or whatever the case may be. I think that's terrific. And that's more important to me than somebody who plays it for, you know, 1,500, 1,600, whatever the number of hours is. You know, that people can find the experience they're looking for in the game, no matter how long it goes, I think that's terrific.
And finally, so Morrowind came out for the Xbox. Oblivion is coming out for the 360. So does that mean you're going to be having Elder Scrolls 5 coming out for the Xbox 720?
No. No. Our goal this time is to come out with more than one game per console cycle. Because doing one per console is about the dumbest thing you could ever do. You know, we made a conscious decision with this one that we wanted to do some groundbreaking stuff, and that was just going to happen to fall with when the new console came out. But yeah, I would say our goal is to get, you know, another one of these out before the next console comes out. God help us if we can't manage to do that. But, you know, we're doing things a little differently, and hopefully, you know, things will line up so that you'll see at least another Elder Scrolls game on the 360 before the next one comes out.
Ah, that is good to hear. So thank you very much, Pete. I'm actually going to go play some more because it is just too much damn fun.
Good.
And thanks quite a bit.
Sure.
So thanks again, Pete, for sitting down and answering all those questions. I will say that next week I'm going to give, again, the detailed preview of Oblivion for both the 360 as well as the PC. I played both for several hours today. And before I'm not going to really go into the preview this week. I'll give you guys a little taste this week. The little taste is that I have to say when I played Oblivion in November, I only played it for really like 20, 30 minutes, and we only played the very beginning intro section. I didn't get outside. I wasn't able to really do that much in the game. But here, I was able to do everything. You know, tried a little bit of everything. I was able to actually go into a couple of dungeons, join a couple of guilds, go through main sections of the main storyline, do a couple of side quests, steal a horse, battle monsters, level up, you name it. I was able to, you know, I tried a little bit of everything in this game, and I have to say that this is really looking fantastic. Not just visually. I mean, it's a stunningly beautiful game, but the actual fun factor of this game is a real step up, I think, from Morrowind. It's that, you know, one of the big, as we kind of mentioned in the interviews, like one of the big issues with these games, you know, the first three Elder Scrolls, even in my opinion, even, is that they're very tough to get into for people who aren't into being able to do anything and go through anything. You know, for some people, that's all they want to do. You know, they don't care about the main quest. They just want to live in the world. But this one almost has like a Grand Theft Auto approach to it, in the sense that it's very clear and it shows you how to go to and accomplish the main quest and the main goals. However, at the same time, if you just want to spend time wandering around and going into some dungeons and finding caves and just going on a million side quests, you can do that too. You know, kind of like the way Grand Theft Auto does. And you can just reward, you know, you can be rewarded however you want. If you just want to go and do some guild quests, you can do that. If you want to actually do the main quest, you can do that too. And unlike the past games, I felt that the past games sort of threw you into the world and then you had to figure it out on your own. This game really helps you along, but not just enough. It doesn't give you too much, you know, for the hardcore Elder Scrolls fans, I guarantee it's not going to feel like it's forced to you in any way, shape, or form. It's just little things like really improving the quest log, having that really spelled out and showing exactly where your main quests are and your side quests. That alone helps, and then even showing how to accomplish or how to really lead yourself to those next quests. On the other hand, if you want to completely ignore that, you can just do whatever you want, but I'll give you guys a full preview next week, as I said, and I wrote down exactly what I did throughout the day and give you a blow-by-blow description of the game. But I do have to say is that I was pretty excited about this game before, and now I'm even more excited about this game, and that this is the game that will probably get me out of my gaming doldrums that I'm in right now. And anyhow, that's it for this week's show. Once again, I want to thank Bethesda and Pete for letting me play the game for an entire day. And boy, I'm a little beat. But I will be talking to you guys next week, where I'll be giving the preview and I'll have my normal show. So until then, have a good gaming week and I will see you then. Bye.
to Gaming Steve. If you have a question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. You've been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, keep collecting those damn coins.